we have a very special guest. He's been very busy, going to get busier too. The Speaker of the House.
Well, he's joining us in our Touchpoint Rehab interview chair, Brad, and it is the Speaker of the House, Joel Arasimowicz. Mr. Speaker, good morning. Welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. Good. How about yourself?
I'm a little tired, but I'm hanging in there.
You need a MyPillow.
You need a MyPillow.
I literally was searching it up on my laptop as you were talking. I heard you, and I'm like, all right, let me take a look at this. It may work.
When are we going to get a budget?
Oh, if I could predict that, I'd probably need to go to Las Vegas to start laying odds on other things. But I don't know. I can't fault the effort of everybody involved, and I really mean that. The governor's office has really been pushing hard, and Len Fasano's been great. I met with Themis again yesterday. We talked briefly. Folks are trying. It's just a really complex issue. It's a huge hole. There's many moving pieces. The tax issue and folks' reluctance to raise taxes is there. The Hartford issue, how are we going to come up with that money for Hartford? It's complex. And we got the crumbling foundations in there, too, and we want to help those people up in that area of the state.
Now, let me ask you about Hartford. In your estimation, do you think that Hartford will have to file bankruptcy?
I surely hope not. Representative Matt Ritter, the whole Hartford delegation, and Senator Fonterra have been in the room, and we're trying everything we can. The last thing we want to do, though, is just provide a one-year fix or a two-year fix, and Luke and the city of Hartford find themselves right back in the same situation 2 years from now. So it has to be a long-term structural change, and I really think that's going to be the theme of the budget. And that's why we're struggling. Many elected officials, legislatures included, I'm not just picking on the governor's office, regardless of party, really have kicked the can down the road and did things that made sense in the short term, but in the long term made this state in a worse financial situation. And all parties involved are trying to avoid that this year.
How much of a sticking point is the proposed increase of the sales tax to 6.99% and also this proposed tax on restaurants that would empower municipalities to impose it? How much of a sticking point is that with the Republicans?
They haven't specifically said it. Themis came out and said absolutely no tax increases under any circumstances, which makes negotiations really hard. Len has been open. He says, well, look, if you can explain why it's really worth it and what we're going to do with it to help the state in the long run, I'll definitely consider it. But it's hard for all of us. It's a regressive tax. It's not somewhere where we necessarily want to go. But the original idea came from CCM, and they want some control. They want the ability to raise money. And if you look at Rhode Island, that's exactly what they have. They have a 7% sales tax and a 1% food and beverage tax. And so also being competitive with our neighbors, but it's not a decision we come to easily. It's really hard. We prefer not to raise any taxes.
Now, we also hear that the Republicans, Mr. Speaker, are opposed to the deal that the governor negotiated with the unions, and the rank and file overwhelmingly approved when we heard of that vote earlier in the week. So how do you handle that as far as the budget is concerned?
It's our intention in the House to vote on that Monday. We'll pass it and send it up to the Senate, and then the Senate will pass it. The real problem is, and we all can have concerns, and was it the best deal? Could we have done better? Some actually say, should we have done the deal at all? But it really is 1.5 to 1.6 billion savings in the biennium. Without those savings, we really don't have a budget. It makes long-term structural changes to the benefit plans of the state employees, puts them more in line with our neighboring states. The Rhode Island deal, it's very similar when it comes to the pension plan. It's a hybrid with the 401k included. So it really does make some changes. And the governor is a tough negotiator. I can tell you that from dealing with him over the past 3 weeks. So I imagine he really made a calculated decision that it was the best he can get, and we should approve it. Otherwise, I don't know that we have a budget within the next year. We're struggling right now to come up with $300 to $400 million in cuts, efficiency, savings, taxes. If we piled on another $1.5 billion, I just can't imagine how we'd ever come to an agreement. And there's people hurting in this state of Connecticut in absence of a budget.
Mr. Speaker, I do spend some time in Rhode Island, and let me just tell you, I'm sure you must know this too. Rhode Island is not cheap. I mean, you used an example, but let me tell you, they got big problems too, and they're not cheap over there.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that really saved Rhode Island is their current governor went in and made some real structural changes.
That's right.
To the state employees, municipal employees, their benefits. And, you know, she is out there. Businesses tell me all the time, look, we went and talked to Rhode Island. The governor was at our door within 10 minutes saying, what can I do to help? And I think that's part of what we have to do here in Connecticut. And making the structural change needs to happen sooner rather than later.
Mr. Speaker, now you said something which is interesting, because we had Senator Fasano on the program earlier in the week, and he was concerned that the vote by the House on the concessions deal that was approved by the unions would actually be wrapped into the budget vote. But what you're saying is there will be a specific vote on this concessions deal on Monday when the legislature meets in the veto session.
Yeah, and that really is, and you bring up a great point there. I remember on opening day when I was sworn in as Speaker, some of my colleagues in the House were making an issue of my position and talking about collective bargaining. And at that point, I said, any collective bargaining agreement that comes, I'm going to do like no other Speaker has done, and I'm going to put it up on the board. And less than 3 weeks later, we did exactly that. And I intend to vote on it separately. I really believe folks should have the ability to voice their opinions and cast a vote in the affirmative or the negative on this deal. It's just the right thing to do.
Are you concerned, because we hear about some of these conservative Democrats, three or four in particular, in the House of Representatives, are you concerned that they might vote against this deal and go to the Republicans on this issue?
I don't believe so. I've spent a lot of time talking to my members, and I've even been criticized for of not being one of those leaders that cracks heads or forces people to vote. I've let people enter into a deliberative process, and we've provided them as much information as we can. We've really weighed the options. We've talked to the AG's office. We've looked at other states, and I'm fairly confident. I mean, you never know till the day of that we'll vote it out of the House and put it up on the Senate to pass so we can start achieving some of those savings. There's a timeline factor in there, too. Part of what we did is we're converting over some of our retirees to a different type of health insurance. We have to negotiate that contract, and the enrollment period is only at the first of the year, and that contract has to be in place, and that conversion has to happen. So it's a time sensitive. Otherwise, we're going to waste the opportunity to save a couple hundred million dollars in taxpayers' money.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it's been a battle all along. If you had to make a prediction, okay? If you had to make a prediction, when...
Well, he's going to go to Vegas, Brett.
Well, I know. That's why I'm asking the question. When do you think we'll get a budget?
Well, that's the issue, right?
So I'm always the optimist. And I've been proven to be incorrect over the past couple guesses I gave. And I actually got a call from a former leader in the state that said, hey, stop with the predictions, because then it's always your fault. But I'm going to continue to be an optimist. I'm hopeful that we can get something done by the end of the month.
I mean, I read where you've alerted them to set July 31st aside. Is that right?
Yeah, so we're holding a few dates. Monday, obviously, is the veto session. We're hoping to act on the CBEC agreement on that day. We told them to hold next Thursday for another caucus and an update, which we've been having more caucuses than I've ever had previously in my tenure at the legislature, just to keep people informed. And then the following Monday, either for a caucus or a potential vote. So it's just a matter of giving folks notice. A lot of them are at the Capitol. I have to tell you, I've been there solid for the last 3 weeks at various points, a lot of late nights, and many of my colleagues are there from the House and even House Republican side, like, what can we do to help? So they're fully engaged and ready to go, and it's more giving them the notice they need to plan their lives appropriately. We all do have other jobs for the most part.
Now, the governor, as you know, has proposed a mini 3-month budget until a permanent budget is adopted, but I read where you're not necessarily a fan of that. Can you explain why?
Sure. And it really does go both ways. I know the nonprofits and the community service providers in the state are really going through a hardship. They don't know when the checks are coming, and they're trying to provide the services to the folks that need it. And that's the plus side to the mini budget. But the downside to the mini budget, in my opinion, is that it also makes some permanent changes in the way we fund things around the states, hospitals and other, at least the last version provided by the governor. And the expiration date for those mini budgets is September 30th. I have to preserve our ability to come to a deal that benefits everybody, not just one person. And for my members to sit on the House floor the day before the checks are supposed to go out to their municipalities and say there is no pressure on them to act maybe against their own best interest would be very hard. If those checks don't go out on October 1st, we're essentially going to start shutting down schools and town halls. It'll be something we've never seen in the state of Connecticut. So I think every moment we waste talking about a mini budget that would just put more pressure on us come the end of September is a moment we're wasting from coming up with a really fiscally prudent budget for the state of Connecticut. So I'm focused on the 2-year. Maybe a few more weeks. It doesn't look as promising. I'll consider it again. I never close off options, but I really think it's the last resort and the worst choice for the state of Connecticut right now.
Mr. Speaker, thank you so much for sharing some time with Dan and myself this morning, and good luck to you. The people are waiting. We're all waiting, and we'll leave it to you.
Thank you. And when this is all done, I'd love to swing by the old Brooklyn Bakery there over in Waterbury and come down and visit and bring you guys some donuts, and we can hang out for a couple hours and maybe field some questions from the folks.
That's an absolute deal. You've got it. Whenever you're ready, we'll do it, Mr. Speaker.
Absolutely. We will be right there in the center of the universe.
Thanks so much.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend. Thank you.
You too. Take care.